All right, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. I'm Blair Morrison.
I'm Ben Alderman, and we're sitting here with Larry Grant, former Ohio State Buckeye, 6 years in the NFL, including a season or two with the 49ers. Larry, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
Niners could use you this year, boy.
They can use a lot more than me this year.
Yeah, do you play quarterback?
Nah, I can't do that.
They could use a little help throwing the ball around. So, Larry, you're a local guy. You're kind of raised here in Northern California, kind of bounced around a little bit. I saw you were born in Santa Rosa. Tell us a little bit about, like, where you went to school and that whole thing.
Yeah, well, I've been around the Bay Area in Northern California pretty much all my life, and I was able to graduate from Foothill High School here in Sacramento. And, you know, being here in Sacramento, kid, it's always good to be back home and do good things in the city.
For sure. What are some of the things you're working on now? I know we're going to get back to what you've been doing in the NFL or what you did in the NFL, but what things are you focusing on right now?
Right now, you know, there's always an opportunity to play again, but, you know, always when I have time like this, I do my best to be able to go into the inner city and reach out to some of the kids and possibly help them do some workouts and, you know, do anything I can to help. You know, right now I'm at the time, I'm training some high school athletes that are transitioning from high school to the next level of college and just helping them get prepared and knowing what to expect.
Now, what's that looking like now? I mean, it's been, for Ben and I, it's been, you know, going on 15 years or so since we were in high school. And I know sports always are evolving and changing and all that. But, like, what is it looking like for high school athletes now, at least at schools like Foothill? I don't know if you're training some other high schools around the area, but are there a lot of opportunities for these kids, or is it something that's kind of been – it's kind of on them to make it happen?
You know, being in the area where I've been helping this past football season in high school in the Foothill area, the opportunities are not like it once used to be in the area. But, you know, when you got a guy that's there and wants to be there and shows the – you know, just shows them a little bit of love and attention, it gives them a lot more to think about and a lot more to look up to. So me being a bit of a difference maker and helping out the kids has made them better. You know, it's nothing like it used to be in the area of Foothill and North Highlands, but I'm down here just to help get it back to where it once used to be.
You mean as far as, like, the reputation and, like, the exposure to colleges?
Definitely. The reputation there – back when I played in 2003 and above at Foothill, the program was it's in a such better state. And now that things have went down in not just the high school level, but the Pop Warner level, things are just not as well as it used to be. It's not, you know, it's not ran as well as it used to be. You know, things it just kind of went downhill. And being that I'm from the area, I feel like it's a duty that I got to go back just to give a little bit of life to those kids and let them know that the grass is a lot greener, you know, once you get around the block, you know.
Yeah. And it's funny how that, like, kind of, like, rotates between.
Yeah.
Because I know, I mean, when I was there, it was a different – all the league structures were different.
Yeah.
You know, like, the sizes of the schools have changed, and now you got schools, at least in our area, and I know Folsom is like a powerhouse all of a sudden. They weren't anything 10 years ago. And so it's funny how that kind of – shifts and it grows in different directions.
Do you feel like you being back and you being associated with that will get some of these kids a little bit more attention, will get them more looks? Does football really work that way?
You know, really, what you do on and off the field as a person, as a player yourself, is really what's going to get the attention that comes your way. You know, if you're doing the right things on the field and the right things off the field, you know, there's no doubt that you're going to have more opportunities than the guy that's not putting them both together. You know what I mean? But in that area, I mean, it's a big school. It's one of the biggest schools in the North Islands area, but it's just a lot of kids around there that just don't have that fire and desire that once used to have in football and in sports, period.
When you say off the field, I'm sure, like, some of that is, like, associating with the right people, doing the work in the classroom, things like that, but from what you've seen, like, the last year or so, I mean, this is primarily a fitness show.
Yeah.
We got a lot of people that listen that do CrossFit or, you know, heavy strength and conditioning. Like, what's the work ethic like with these kids, and what's their training systems like? Is it pretty advanced? Is it similar to what, you know, you would do in college, or is it still a step behind?
It's definitely a step behind from where I used to be. Okay. You know, and this in the North Highlands area. I don't know so much about the Folsom area and other areas in the Sacramento area, but I know in North Highlands is nowhere near, the work ethic is nowhere near what it used to be, and that's why I want to bring that intensity back to these kids.
So you also mentioned like being off the field doing the right thing.
Yeah.
In the gym, probably mm-hmm. staying out of trouble. Right.
Definitely.
That whole thing. Is it just because there's so many more kids that want an opportunity that you have to do both now? Is that kind of why it's becoming more and more difficult to get noticed? Because, like, you can't just be good at football anymore. You have to be, I don't know, maybe good grades or have no history of any kind of trouble or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, going further in life when it comes to college and professional sports, perception is everything. And what people see, I mean, you can have the best you can be the best athlete on the field. Be better than a lot of people on the field. But if you can't put the effort in the classroom and you can't put the effort in the weight room and your behavior and what people see and say about you is not positive, you know, it's not going to take you too far just being a good athlete nowadays.
Right. I feel like, especially when you're in high school, like if you're a great athlete in high school, you're the biggest fish in that pond, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard for you to realize how many other ponds mm-hmm. there are and how small a fish you might actually be yeah. once you get to the next level. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, I know from – I played college football, not at the level that you did, but I saw the recruiting process
yeah.
from that. And the coaches don't have a lot of time. So if you have a bad reputation, that's just an easy way for them to just scratch you off their list.
It sure is. I've been around a lot of those guys. Being that I was also a junior college transfer, I was in a junior college where there was a lot of guys that messed up a lot of opportunities that they had because of one thing that they did off the field, whether it was in the classroom, whether it was getting in trouble in the streets, everything. When you're an athlete, when it comes to any sport, no matter what it is, when you're an athlete, if you don't keep your name clean and do the right things at all times, just one mistake can put you in a lot of trouble.
Right, because you are replaceable.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to a couple of guys who've played professional football, mm-hmm. and they've told me something very similar to what you're saying, and they've actually even told me that they can count 10 guys who are better than them mm-hmm. who did not make the league because they messed up. Do you mm-hmm. feel like that's an accurate statement? Do you feel like that's actually true?
Definitely. I mean, I don't want to speak too much about where certain guys are, but there's a lot of friends that I've had growing up that were the guys ahead of me on almost every team I played on. But given that I had a couple of people in my life that I looked up to and helped me steer into the right direction, you know, I got an opportunity that they didn't get, you know. But that it's just a lot of guys out there that are just as good enough to play now in the NFL, NBA, or whatever sport it is, but because of one mistake they made, they're not there.
How do you feel about some of the guys that have already made it that are all of a sudden now their mistakes are just now coming to light, right? Guys
yeah.
like Ray Rice, Greg Hardy, these are, you know, lightning rods currently in the media and mm-hmm. in the NFL. And, you know, there's getting a lot of pushback from
yeah.
society on how many chances these guys should be getting.
Yeah, well, those guys have their own personal issues, man, and I don't know what's going on with their issues, but I know that, you know, everything that you do in the dark is going to come out in the light. You know, if you keep a clean state and stay out of trouble, you won't have to deal with nothing bad from the media, from any people. You just got to keep yourself clean.
Is that part of the message that when you go into the inner
yeah.
city that you're trying to tell these kids? Is this like your platform? Is there something else to it right now? I mean, like, what is that your main message? What is it?
My main message is always, you know, give everything you got, whether it's on the field or off the field, in the classroom, in the streets. You know, just make sure you keep yourself clean, because you never know when one opportunity can just pass you right by just because of one mistake that you made.
Being at the highest level, you know, with the sport of football, I mean, that's the biggest sport in America, probably one of the biggest sports in the world. That's a pretty big spotlight.
Yeah.
Right. So, like you said, things are going to come out into the light. That locker room,
mm-hmm.
that's shielded from that scrutiny to some degree, right?
Some degree.
Talk a little bit about what that's like, being inside the locker room, of an NFL team, you know, some of the stuff that stays in-house that you guys kind of bond together on?
Well, you know, every locker room that I've been in, it's been like a brotherhood. Whether we've been in the dirt, I've been on a team that was 1-15, you know, and I've been on a team that was in the Super Bowl. So I've seen both sides of it. At the end of the day, we're all, it's a big brotherhood in the NFL. Whether we're on the same team or not, it's a big brotherhood. And whatever goes on in that locker room, the best thing that we can do is handle it within the locker room, get it all together, and forget about it and move on. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you have your guys that like to go to the media and say certain things, and it can be a cancer to each locker room. But, you know, that's when you have the older vets to be able to, you know, lean on them a little bit and help them out. So we can keep everything going in the right direction. But it's usually a brotherhood in every locker room I've been in.
So I'm kind of curious about that, because on the college level, obviously, guys that are freshmen and sophomores, underclassmen, you have this inferiority kind of built in because you're new to the school. Mm-hmm. But when you say, like, and you always hear this about guys on TV saying, yeah, well, the veterans in that locker room got to keep the locker room in order. Like, they can't let guys act out like this. What does that conversation actually look like? Because I'm having a hard time imagining somebody making, you know, $10, $15 million being talked down by anybody. Is it like a – is it just strength in numbers, or how does that actually look?
You know, it's like it's certain guys that you have to pay respects to. It's like they're you're not going to have a rookie come in the NFL and talk back to Ray Lewis. You know, when Ray Lewis speaks, everybody's going to be listening.
Just because he's
that guy, and there, you know, Ray Lewis is one of the greatest of all times. But there is a Ray Lewis in every locker room, of in every NFL team, and in college there is a Ray Lewis on every college, and on any college football team, any program. But you know, that guy just has to be the one to be able to be the voice of all the vets, not just one. And when you're a young guy, you listen to it when they speak. Sometimes it might not register right away, but eventually you'll understand that when they tell you something, they're only telling you because it's right.
Who was that guy on the 2013 49ers team that you went to the Super Bowl with?
That guy was Justin Smith. Justin Smith was probably the older guy on the team, and we know he's been through it. He's been on the great teams. He's been on the worst teams. And, you know, anything that he says, all eyes are going to be focused on him. And everybody's going to listen and pay attention, because he wasn't telling nobody nothing wrong. He came from a place and made it to a place that everybody else wanted to be. So when he spoke, everybody listened.
I see you kind of, in some sense, taking that role on when you go into the inner city and you start talking to these guys. Like, you're being the Ray Lewis, right? Like, you're being the, you know, like, that's kind of your role. What makes a guy like Justin Smith, like, what makes him somebody that you want to listen to? I know that he's played in the league. I know he's been on those great teams. But what made him great? Like, what made him somebody that you wanted to follow, you know, into the Super Bowl?
The one thing that Justin did, you know, you get a lot of vets that, you know, they're just there. You know, but the one thing that Justin did, he went out and he practiced hard every day. He went out and did the things that you as a rookie or a young guy don't want to do. You know, everybody don't want to lift weights 4 times a week, maybe twice, you know, do it because we have to. But then when you get in the weight room, or you walking into the building and you see Justin there at 6 o'clock in the morning in the weight room, outworking the guys that's been there for 6 months when he's 13 years in the game. You know, when you're a young guy, you want to be that guy 12 years later. So that's the type of stuff that he did, that he didn't even have to speak too much. It's just what he did, what he led by example. You know, that's what we picked up off him.
Is there a component of, like, talent in that leadership equation? I mean, Justin's obviously a dominant player. Like, he's like one of the guys that maybe didn't get the amount of respect he should have, but you talk to anybody who knows the game, says, like, that's a guy we don't want to play against.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have to be good to be a leader?
No, not necessarily, but think about the NFL.
They're all good.
You know, it's 53 guys that were the best player on their college football team. So everybody is good at some certain extent. You know, you might not be the $100 million man, but if you have something positive to say that can help our team, everyone's going to listen. It's all about having a respect for your brother. Mm-hmm. And the brotherhood that we had, you listen to your brother.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting to think about, there being one guy on every team that is kind of the voice that represents the direction that franchise is going.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can look at certain franchises, who that voice is, and maybe it's not the right voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking back a couple years ago to the situation in Miami with the bullying scandal.
Richie Incognito.
Yeah, Incognito, right? That's what they were all saying, was like,
right.
He was that guy, right? And I don't know.
I play with Richie.
Okay.
And the thing about Richie, was he a bully on the field? Yeah, he was everything he did was to help his team. You know, sometimes he had some crazy penalties or whatnot, but that's just all about him going 100 miles per hour every play. But that situation in that locker room, I don't know much about it.
Right.
But I just know that Richie ain't that type of guy. The craziest part about that whole situation is that the guy Martin actually, you know, was like, he kind of looked up to Richie.
Right.
But as a rookie in a locker room full of vets, you're going to have to deal with some things.
Right.
You know, some things might have got out of hand, but I don't know. I wasn't there, so I couldn't tell you.
You said that, you know, you got 53 guys that were the best player on their college football team. Mm-hmm. Take us a little bit back a little bit to Ohio State and when you played there. What was that experience like, just being in that program? I mean, that program gets so much attention, so much media attention, you know, and you guys were great those 2 years. So talk about that.
Are.
Yeah.
Well,
because it sounds honestly, like to me, when I talk to you a little bit, I still feel like you associate yourself a little bit as a Buckeye.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I'm a Buckeye bred.
Yeah, right?
Scarlet and gray. I bleed it. So, that was the two best years of my life. You know, I got a chance. I moved my mom out there and some more of my family to Columbus. And they said today, even though they didn't know nothing about Ohio State or any kind of college football, but that was the two best years of their life as well. Man, that program, there's nothing bad that I can say about that program. You know, from the coach that I had, which was Jim Tressel, to the coach that they have now, Urban Meyer, two of the top coaches in the last 10, 15 years, you know, in college football. You know, they run the program perfectly.
How do they bring a team, they're so well gelled. Like, how do they do that? What is it about those guys that gets them to, like, work so well together?
We did a lot of stuff together as a team. I mean, we always, training camp, you know, when you all blood, sweat, and tears for 30 days in training camp with the same guys for 30 days in a row, you build a certain type of bond. And that's Jim Tressel. He knew how to do that. He knew how to get the best out of everybody to make sure everybody was doing things together as a team. There was no individuals. We all played as one, and that's why we had the success that we had.
I just feel like those unique guys at the top, you know, Jim Tressel, Urban Meyer, whatever. But, like, everybody's doing a 30-day training camp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, everybody's coming together and putting in work, you know? And I'm just trying to figure out what makes them different, at least what made your guys' teams different.
Yeah. And why is it that everywhere Harbaugh goes, like, it works in 1 year?
Harbaugh's a great coach.
Like, what is he doing that makes – he can just do it so fast. I don't understand.
He's one of those guys that he knows what to do to turn the program around. He's one of my favorite coaches of all time. That coached me.
Right.
Harbaugh's a great dude. You know, everybody might not like him in every system, but at the end of the day, he's going to do what he can for the players and for the team to make sure we're winning games.
Is that the difference then? Is this these guys like Tressel, Meyer, you know, Harbaugh, they could actually go to any system if they had 53 guys who were all buying in that they could lead them to greatness?
Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, Coach Harbaugh's still going to lose next weekend. I got all the respect for him, but he's still going to lose next week.
They're playing Ohio State?
Otherwise, playing he's going to go down in Columbus.
But we're going to that state up north, and we're going to do some butt-whooping up there for sure.
So what are you
going to the game?
No, I won't be there. I'll be here. I'll be right there in front of my TV.
In front of your own TV, that's getting ready to coach your kids the next day.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be a little bit of a – I mean, obviously, you're still Ohio State number one, but to see – you know, your coach across the field like that. I mean, when it's not this weekend, you probably got to root for him a little bit.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about Ohio State and that school up north, we root for each other during the season. So
that school up north.
We root for each other during the season so we can make the game just that much bigger.
Right.
You know, we want them to stay undefeated as long as they can, then lose to us, of course. It always happens.
Right. Well, I agree.
Makes it a better win, right?
It hasn't been as great of a rivalry the last 5 or 6 years, just because Michigan's been down.
It will be back now, though.
Yeah.
Coach Harbaugh is going to make sure immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, that game's getting all the hype, right?
It will be.
Yeah.
It will be next week for sure. For sure.
So, you know, kind of switching gears maybe just a bit out of football and back to kind of some of the stuff that you've been doing. You and I, when you came in, we started training. We started lifting weights. You weren't that good. I was just kidding. He's real good at lifting weights. He's not that good at CrossFit. So, but anyway, we softened you up a little bit. And then I brought my little girls in here. I have little foster girls that we're in the process of adopting. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I was a foster kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, like, just kind of, like, almost haphazardly just kind of threw that out there. Mm. And so that kind of gave us a little bit more of a connection, like, in terms of where you've been, what I'm dealing with. Talk to these guys. Talk to these listeners about the foster system and your upbringing in that and what that experience was like, playing sports and kind of bounce around like that.
Well, growing up, I was a child of the foster care system in the Bay Area. I lived in two different foster homes and also lived in a group home as well in the Bay Area. You know, I love my mother, I love my father, but at that time they weren't in a position to be able to be the type of parents that I needed them to be. Mm-hmm. You know, granted, a whole bunch of other stuff was going on as well, but I got into the foster care system, you know, and I had some people that did a great job taking care of me until my family got back in the right position for me to come home. But, you know, that's part of my life that I have nothing bad to say about it. I appreciate it because without that, I wouldn't be here where I am today.
What is a group home look like? I think a lot of people, at least that I talk to, because, you know, people wonder what would happen. Because people, honestly, they come to me and say, hey, what if you decide not to adopt your girls? I'm like, well, they're going to go back to another foster home. And well, what's a foster home versus a group home?
Well, back when I went to group home, the group home that I went to was a little bit different. It was in a building, and it was just a room with a whole bunch of little twin-size beds on the floor that I was on. And it was gated. It had one park, and it was at the tip-top of the building. It was in San Francisco. Could never leave the building. Just the group home that I was in.
How old were you at this time?
I believe I was something like 8, 9, 10 years old. I was young.
Okay.
But nowadays, group homes are a little bit different because I have family members that actually work in group homes today. They have actual houses where, you know, these kids get placed at, and, you know, they watch over them and try to help these kids stay on the right direction. Mm-hmm. You know, anything that I've been through, man, it's a testament of where I am, who I am today. Mm-hmm. And that struggle that I went through, man, if I didn't have that struggle, I probably would be still lost in certain things that I want to do right now. Mm-hmm. So being that I had those situations, man, and it was a blessing.
Was the transition from the foster system back to your family, was that difficult?
You know, I was so young. You know, I really wasn't. It really didn't bother me that much because all I wanted to do was go outside and play sports anyways.
Right.
Same thing that I did in the foster care home, you know. So it wasn't that bad for me, you know. Still, the situation with my family wasn't the greatest, but all I really wanted to do was go outside and play sports. So nothing really bothered me.
Yeah. Was that your crutch, like, that you used to get through, you know what I mean? Like, even, I don't even just mean foster kids, but, you know, like, all kids are trying to get through something, right? Like, was it sports that you leaned on? Was that your main thing?
Yeah, I did a lot of stuff by myself. I mean, of course, I played with all the other kids that was in the area, but I used to always just go outside and lay on my back, throw the football up in the air, catch the ball. I played football by myself in the front, in the yard, or wherever I was, you know. That was my crutch, was playing any type of sports.
That's so interesting. Like, to look at it from that perspective, you know, it's like sports can be your identity. Mm-hmm. Like, when maybe you don't have a family or you don't have a school that you go to, if you're moving around from school to school. Like, the fact that athletics can be something that's that, you know, grounding for someone in flux like that, that's really powerful, man. That's like, and I'm sure you can imagine if you didn't have it, or like you got some other kids out there who maybe aren't as committed to it, how slippery that slope can be when you don't have something to ground you like that.
Definitely.
I feel like for me, like, even growing up, like, I had like a lot of support systems, you know what I mean? But I chose sports in a lot of sense to be my crutch. You know what I mean? And like, I feel like that's cool. I mean, it's like the one thing that you did have. And it's also the same thing that a lot of these kids that you're probably coaching are choosing to be their crutch, right?
Because
they see so much, right? Kids see so much in the media. Heroes come from our sports teams, right? Good or bad. And I think that kind of what you're saying is that you want these kids to be good, right?
Yeah,
be good more than just don't just look at their stats. Look at what they do. You know what I mean? Look at the person, right? And then that's going to force them to look and see, I guess, what kind of person that they should be.
Me helping these kids, man, all I want them to all I want to be able to do is bring out the best that they have in them. You know, when I'm training these kids, I make everything fun. Everything that I'm doing is going to be a positive to everything that they have. You know, if they're fast, I plan on making them a little bit faster or helping them get to any point that they want to reach. You know, and the kids also like my personality, so that makes it a lot easier for us to get along.
So, we talked a little bit too off the air about some of our other passions. We were talking a little bit of UFC, a little MMA. We're just fresh off this Ronda Rousey Holly Holm fight, and I was just like scrolling through your IG, and it looks like you're a pretty big Ronda Rousey fan.
Not at all. I mean, I'm not. I like Ronda. She's definitely one of the most devastating fighters in the world, but I'm a big time Holly Holm fan, and
yeah, I
was
just
before
kidding.
She even came into the UFC.
Where were you seeing her fight?
I don't remember exactly. I think I don't remember exactly what sanction it was. No. Whether it was Invicta, or I think that's where another fighter is right now. But she was in a different sanction or whatever, a different company. But you know, UFC wanted to get in there, but the money just wasn't right. But you know, I've always watched her wherever she's been. Even when she boxed, I watched her as a boxer. And once I seen her start kicking people in the head and using that the bigger ring to her advantage, the bigger octagon to her advantage, I knew she was going to be able to cause some havoc in the UFC for sure.
Well, you must be a real fan then, because I mean, I'd say I'm just like a weekend fan.
Oh yeah, I'm like definitely a casual UFC fan.
I've never heard of every girl that comes up to fight Rousey. Like I've never heard of him ever.
Yeah.
So when this happened, I was like, okay, I guess I got to start watching again.
Well, Ronda ends up being the measuring stick, right, that we measure all other women against,
right,
because that's who we know, right? So we're just like, oh, could she beat Ronda Rousey? You know what I mean? Like, well, is this girl good? I don't know. Could she beat Ronda Rousey?
Could she make it 30 seconds with Ronda Rousey?
Yeah. Is she just going to get armbarred like everyone else? So you kind of like were thinking about how she would win that fight, you know, and why she would win. Just from a, you know, I know you're an NFL guy, but like, just break that down. Why do you think she could win?
You know, I always thought Holly Holm would be able to use her athleticism to her advantage and move around enough to frustrate Ronda Rousey or any fighter that she fight, because she's so athletic and so long, and she's just naturally bigger than everybody. A lot of people don't know that Holly Holm used to be 200 pounds. And she cut all the way down to become a 135-pound fighter. You know, a lot of people don't know that.
My size, then she cut down to Blair's size.
Yeah, man, 200 pounds? That's a lot of strength inside her then.
Yeah, and then she's not only is she physically bigger than a lot of all the girls she fight, but she's also by far way more athletic than all the girls as well.
So if she would have went in there as the favorite, would you have wanted her to win as badly, or is it a little bit that she was like that 7-1 underdog that made you want to win her to win even more?
Nah, I just, you know, I'm real big on combat sports, and I'm a Mayweather fan, and I like fighters that know how to use the ring to their advantage, like Floyd does, and how Holly did in the octagon, because she used to do the same thing in the square circle as well. And even if Holly was if Ronda was the underdog or anybody else was in there, I'm going to choose Holly to win the fight just because I know what she can do because I've watched her for so long.
Are there any other women out there that the rest of us don't know about that might be coming up soon? Or is this just going to be like a Ronda versus Holly for like four more fights?
I wouldn't even want to see that fight again, honestly.
But you're going to.
Yeah, I know. We're going to see it, but I think the next, if we see it again, it might be worse for Ronda Rousey.
So who is the next girl coming up then?
I don't think there is really a next girl coming up. There are girls that are already there. Like the one girl that nobody wants to fight is Chris Cyborg, the girl that looks like
right.
She's real big.
Yeah.
And
I think she what's got pop the hold up I think she got, pop used for steroids.
Yeah, a couple right? years ago.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
got kicked out of the UFC.
Okay. For that's that. What it is.
But now
she had more testosterone than Larry. They test her.
Oh, boy.
she's back in the UFC now, but she's too big. She walks around at 180 pounds and she cuts to 145, but there's no 145 division in the UFC.
So somebody has to move up to fight her.
Mm-hmm. And right. Holly Holm is really the only person that I think that will step up and fight her and beat her.
Hmm. Talk about using the octagon and the square circle mm-hmm. and just like different things like that. Talk about the football field mm-hmm. and seeing the football field from a linebacker's perspective. How good do you have to be at using the field and cutting angles? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that some of that stuff is probably just ingrained in you because you've been mm-hmm. doing it for so long. Yeah. But when you watch somebody on the field, like, what makes somebody who like that great? Like, you know, being able to use the field, being able to cut those angles and just see everything.
You know, everything comes with repetition. What you do is what you do, you know, NFL players, they play on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday. But it's what you do on the days before that's going to get you ready to be able to perform on those on these game time days. And honestly, when you have a team, 11 players on defense, if everybody's not working on one accord and playing together, no matter how good you are, how athletic you are as a linebacker, you're going to make plays, of course. But if your D-line ain't playing in the right places, yeah, it can all fall apart easy. That's what I based my game on was being smart and being a studier of the game. Not only just what I did on the field, it's what I did in the film room, in the classroom, and what I did at home watching film and studying my opponent. You know, once I studied my opponent, I knew what they were going to do before they did it. Mm-hmm. So that made it a lot easier for me as well.
Were you trying to read the linemen mostly or the backs?
I read everything.
Everybody.
Yeah, that's one thing that Coach Singletary taught us. You know, I know Coach Singletary didn't have a good showing as a head coach in San Francisco, but
he knows how to
as a linebacker coach, yeah. He never taught us to just key on one thing. You know, when you key on one thing, you're only going to do one thing. When you see everything, it makes you – when you see everything and keep doing a lot of repetition on seeing everything, you can move a lot faster.
Well, that's probably because the game slows down then a little mm-hmm. bit, right?
When you see everything.
When you see everything, and then you can just react rather than having to
– Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. What was it like when you stepped in to that starting role? You know what I mean? Like that was – obviously, you're studying game. I mean, were you studying and preparing as a starter when you were a
every
backup?
Week. Every week.
And then?
The every week. You know, given that it was me, it was Navarro and Bowman and Pat Willis, the starters, being that I was both of their backups at the time, I had to study and practice just as hard as they did. I had to, even though I knew I wasn't going to start, you know, I still studied and made sure I knew what would happen just in case I was going to have the opportunity to play. And that week, that first week when Pat got hurt.
Was that the Sunday or was that the Monday night game?
No, we played – the Monday night was the following week.
Okay.
We played against St. Louis. And in the second quarter, Pat goes out with a hamstring. And the good thing about me is that because I studied so much and – the team already had trust in me, so as soon as I went in to play, it was like, you know, it was no letdown. They already knew, okay, Larry's in, we're good. We don't have to worry about anything. And I played at a high level every start that I had.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the main difference is, or main difference was? I mean, you obviously were behind some incredible all-pro linebackers mm-hmm. and Willis and Bowman. Mm-hmm. But being a guy who was – you know, like you said, they're both their backups. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the difference between the backup and the starter on most NFL teams or most NFL linebacking corps? Is there much of a drop-off?
You know what? Certain teams there is, certain teams there ain't.
Okay.
But that year in San Francisco, well, it wasn't much of a drop-off at all, really, if you ask me. You know, of course, I'm a little biased because it was myself, but.
Well, you did step in and do a great job, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys had, was Borland there that year?
No, he wasn't there. It was me. and Wilhoit. Mike Wilhoit was the other. Well, he was a special teams guy, and Blake Costanzo was there, and Tavares Gooden was there as well. But you know, I backed up both of them, so I was ready mentally and physically because I studied not just one position; I studied them both to play. So that's why there was no drop off. I was already ready to go.
You got a lot of love from like the local media when you stepped in because you played great, you know. And I mean, what was that? I mean, that probably was probably more the bigger transition. Than just playing football, right? You always play football, right? What was that like?
You know,
Such a high profile player's spot, right? And then you step in.
Yeah, I mean, everybody loved Willis, so like you coming in and like filling in for him—that's a big deal.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really too shy about anything. I'm a pretty comfortable person in pretty much all situations. So when I got more attention from the media, it was cool to me. I wasn't overwhelmed with anything. I'm pretty good and composed in every situation. So it was just like any other day for me.
Do players take a lot of that, a lot of the cues from the coach on how to handle those types of situations?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. You know, everybody sees nowadays how the media can mix up some words, and the media can – They can ask you questions to make you say something that you don't want to say,
right?
You know, so we have to practice what to say in the media so we can make sure we ain't making no mistakes like that,
right?
So is there like a, all right, guys, we're gonna hit pads, you know, at like this time, and then we're gonna stand in front of the microphone at this time and just practice answering questions?
Not like that. I mean, when I was there, Harbaugh was there, and any other coach that coached me, they would just let us know, and the media is going to say this. You know, make sure you control yourself and handle yourself in a professional manner. Mm-hmm. They're going to ask you these questions, so just make sure you answer yourself in a professional manner.
Right. I mean, do you feel like the media maybe would ask questions? I'm just trying to think of what kind of questions they would say to make an NFL player mad. But, like, in your situation, would they say something more like in comparing you to Pat?
Oh, yeah, they do.
Right, and then make you feel like way less of a player, and then you just have to be like, you know, Pat's a great, he's a veteran, blah, 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 and I'm just going to go in there and do my thing.
Exactly.
Smile.
That's the perfect answer right there. I mean, I've never had nothing to say about the next NFL player because we all grind and we struggled and we with blood, sweat, and tears to get to where we were. And the media, they tried. They would ask me certain questions to make me feel like I'm above the next player. But at the end of the day, we all there, and we hard at work from 7 to 5 every single day of the week. And, you know, we're brothers. And I never had nothing bad to say about anybody. We were all cool.
Having been in the league for 6 years, you've obviously been on multiple teams. You've seen what it's like for players to come in and for players to go out.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's a much harsher transition for a lot of veterans on the way out.
Yeah.
Whether that's because of injury or because skills have diminished, or it's a salary cap issue, you know, there's a lot of business involved in that. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know, just as a fan, a little bit of what that looks like from the player's perspective. Because, like you said, you guys are all brothers. You're all grinding, you know, 7 days a week and working so hard. And then it's just almost like, I mean, the shelf life is so short for most of these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, how does somebody prepare for something like that?
You know, it's really what you do when you're in to prepare you for the time when, you know, the league ain't guaranteed and it's time for you to move on and do something else. You know, a lot of guys do different things in their careers to set them up for their life after football.
Okay, so they're thinking about it the whole time.
Now, a lot of guys are, and some guys aren't. You know, because you can be playing one day, then something happens and you don't get another opportunity again. You know, and I've seen it. And so I know that, you know, the good thing about the NFL now is that we have certain trust and certain player engagement opportunities to help certain guys outside that's transitioning to the next level, their next career, make it in so many different ways. All we have to do nowadays is just use the people that we have.
So they're trying to give you guys more tools to make you more successful for your life after football.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's always been kind of, you know, like the public's knock against professional sports, right? Mm-hmm. As these guys get done, they've got millions of dollars, and all of a sudden you hear stories where they're just broke,
yeah.
right? They're on drugs or they're mm-hmm. doing something, you know what I mean?
Right. Pain pills.
Pain yeah. pills or whatever, because they don't know how to cope. They don't know how to move mm-hmm. on. And so it sounds like they're trying to do a better job at ushering mm-hmm. guys into the next stage, because you can't put on the pads forever.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, is there a part of you, because I know that you and I had talked, how much are you looking forward to stepping back onto an NFL football field? And how likely do you think that is for you at this point?
You know, I'm definitely ready to go. If any team called me today, which, you know, me and my agent talk about.
A lot of NFL coaches listen to this podcast, so I'm just
right.
I'm just, they all listen, bro.
Good decision to come on.
Yeah. If any team calls, I'm ready to go. But what I'm doing now is setting myself up to be able to, if no team calls, what I'm doing now is setting myself up to be able, when if no team calls, that I'll be doing something else that I love to do as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when it comes to whether it's coaching, training kids, or any other profession that I want to move into, you know, I have gained so much knowledge in the sport and outside of the sport that I'll be ready to go.
It's like give everything you got, like you said earlier, right? Like just you can't play football right now. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're done
exactly.
giving everything you got. Like, you got to figure out a way to do that.
It's a lifetime struggle. You always got to give everything you got in every situation, not just when it comes to athletics.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself as a football coach, either on, you know, high school, college level? Or
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I definitely can coach, for sure.
But you said you're also doing some, like, private training
I'm doing that as well. You know, given, you know, my background and the things I've learned and the coaches that taught me and everything that I've picked up from the coaches that taught me certain things, you know, I just use my brain as a sponge. The whole seven years I've played in the NFL, I just use my brain as a sponge, picked up on all different types of, you know, things to do to get better. And right now I'm using that and helping out other young athletes in the Sacramento area.
That's very cool. That's very cool. I think, you know, hearing your plans moving forward are so important, because, I mean, even in our sport, in CrossFit, we don't make anywhere near the money. We don't have any kind of support system. We've talked about this for the professional athlete, and actually I've talked to some of the big companies that sponsor some of these athletes, and really it's the onus is on them to really figure out what they're going to do next. And because it's not a lucrative sport, it's worse. You know what I mean? It's like a worse position to be in.
Right, because you don't really have any sort of nest egg that's built up from, like, getting that one big contract or anything like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's basically one major event for us mm-hmm. as athletes. And if you win it, you get $250,000. And if you don't, you don't. They're paying out, like, down to place 20 now, but it's not really real money. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You know, everything starts somewhere. Like the topic we was on earlier, you know, UFC started somewhere, and now they're one of the biggest companies in combat sports. They probably are. You know, they don't make as much money as boxing, of course. But, well, Mayweather. I just put it as that. They don't make as money as Floyd Mayweather pay per view makes on their pay per view dates. But where they started somewhere, and now they're in a situation 15 years later down the line where they're getting pay-per-view fights. They didn't have this 15 years ago. You know, it's everybody got to start somewhere.
Just I think I remember reading the on SureDog.com. I remember reading, like, the payouts for the UFC mm-hmm. fighters back when, like, Matt Hughes fought somebody, and it was like 10 grand, mm-hmm. right? And if you were fighting the night, he got like 20, which was good. And I was like, man, these guys are tripling their money. I'm like, 30K. That's still not very much. If you got to fight like three times a year, mm-hmm. you're making 90, but then you're bonusing out like all your guys in your training camp.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're helping you get ready.
Yeah.
And even if you get to keep it all, it's not like you're making the same amount of money as other professional sports.
Not at all.
Right.
You know?
Now things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about a continuous grind and hard work and everything that you do. And as long as everybody's supporting Cass in every sport, is continuously trying to grind to get to the top of the mountain, to where everybody else is, you can get there if you can just keep grinding.
What do you think about CrossFit as a sport from what you've seen? You trained here at Iron Mile for a little bit. Obviously, you have tons of strength and conditioning experience,
yeah.
and you've seen CrossFit on TV, right?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think of it as a young sport?
It's a growing sport. Because I know 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I wasn't watching CrossFit. But now I turn on ESPN, it's on, it's a big convention, everything. It wasn't like that back in the day. But now it's at a different position to where it's all about grinding. I come in here and a workout with Ben completely different than what I've ever done. But from the results that I've seen from some of the people that I've seen work out in here, it's crazy. It's crazy. But it's definitely a growing sport.
Yeah, do you see – I'm just curious because you've played the highest level – in my opinion, the highest level sport that we have in America. And you've played it at the highest level. You've been to a Super Bowl. If you turn on CrossFit on ESPN and it's on and you're at home, I mean, are you leaving it on or are you turning the channel to something else?
I left it on because I was interested in a lot of stuff that – a lot of different events that they were doing. You know, and I came in here and I seen some of the stuff going on here, and I would ask Ben about the push-ups and all different types of stuff that was going on. You know, it all looked interesting. And when I see those little guys, my bad, Ben, I see those little guys lifting all that weight over their head, picking up these 200-pound kettlebells and walking down, you know, and doing all different types of stuff that I've never done before, it brings another challenge to myself. Okay. And it makes me want to challenge myself to be better as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
Because I've been in CrossFit a little bit longer than Ben has. Like, I was at the games in 2009 before they moved to the major arena they have it at now. And it's obviously grown a ton in size and scale since then. But even back then, I remember, because I was a college football athlete, and I felt like I was more athletic than 95% of the people there. I'm like, I told myself back then, I was like, I know that I'm not even in the top 10% of the actual athletes that are out there.
Yeah.
Probably barely the top 20% of athletes that are out there. I'm like, what's going to happen when these guys that are on the NFL practice squad decide, screw it, I'm going to start doing CrossFit?
It's like a rude awakening. They're going to be in for a rude awakening. But once they get committed to what they're doing, it's a big change. A big change.
Right. You know, I think there's something to be said. People kind of gravitate towards the sport they're good at.
Yeah.
Right? And I know that you playing defense, right, and being like a worker, like there has to be a blend of athleticism and just hard work, you know, being strong, being fast. Do you think that some of these guys who are maybe, like, let's just say in the NFL, that they would be able to adapt enough to do these big long workouts and be at that same, I'm not saying you per se, but just like, are they the guys that are the cream of the crop in terms of athleticism in all sports? Had they just put their mind to that one? Or are guys who are supposed to be good at CrossFit gravitating towards CrossFit and that's making them good? Because if they went to football, they'd get hammered. And are football players gravitating towards football because they went to CrossFit, they would get hammered?
No, I think it's just all about it's self-motivating. It's what you really want to do, you know, because I think if somebody from CrossFit really wanted to put in the work and get better and go play football, I know they can.
I'm done doing this podcast, bro. Hey, what time are your trainings, bro?
Dude, I mean, I appreciate the self-belief and all that, because it's very important. Uh-huh. But there are some physical limitations that people have.
Like, definitely.
I mean, dude, I mean, I don't know what you've seen, but like, when you're fast, you're fast.
Yeah.
Like they say, you can't teach size, you can't teach speed. You can teach some technique on speed, like how to run a faster 40, but guys that are fast are just fast, you know? And that's something that's like a limiter when you get to a certain level, right? Whereas I think in CrossFit, there's a motor that has to be built, but the limiter is just mentality, man, because it's just hard. And you just got to want to be in physical pain, which, you know, most sports, like football, you're bruised and battered and beaten.
It's different from,
you know, it's a different kind of pain.
What y'all doing here, though?
It's different. Right? You're sore from football, but it's like the play lasts, you know, 6 to 10 seconds, right? And then you get to breathe. And so I feel like the adaptation from a football player with incredible genetic potential to CrossFit should be a lot better than somebody like Ben. The old plow horse trying to go into an NFL team. That's just not happening, man.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, that has to be true. Like, I would love to be able to think I could play football.
Yeah.
Right? But,
bro, like, you can't. I can't.
No, I know. But, my boy, you were just saying, what's up in here? He played San Jose State. Like, he could literally sit on the couch and eat potato chips for, like, the next 6 months. And I could just run 40s and go to your practice and whatever. And then we'd get up and I'd be like, hey, bro, we're going to race 40. Was due at 40 right now. And I'd be like, 5.2.
Yeah,
5.2 flat, right? And he'd just go 4.7, 4.6, yeah. Right? And it wouldn't even matter. Like, I can't train enough to run a 4.5.
I see the differences now.
You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think that's possible, but maybe it is.
Because I know when I came in here, it was a lot different for me. I know that much. It's, of course, you know, we're physically gifted. We're all already kind of strong. But the weight that I've seen guys moving in here and women moving in here, it was ridiculous.
Right. Well, how big are you?
245.
245. You're like 6 foot.
6'2",
245. So you're enormous by most CrossFit standards at the elite level.
Like, and they'll outwork me. They'll outlift me.
Yeah.
I've seen it in here with Ben.
Right. Because these guys have trained arm. These things over and over and
I
over
I did
again.
Have one arm for a little while. But you know what? The thing is, I think what the difference is your sport is, and we've talked about this, it's so reactionary.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, like the barbell doesn't move. So if you and I are racing on the bar, like, it's essentially who's conditioned themselves to pick up the barbell more often.
Right.
Right? More times.
And more efficiently.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. technique and all that stuff. But I don't have the same hand-eye coordination or timing okay. or ability in that sense. Like, because
I
I'm not quick.
Saying,
and even if I was quick enough to read the ball like you can or read a player like you can, I can't get to him as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a difference in athleticism, I think, that that I would love to be able to, you know, the competitor in me wants to be like, yeah, you know, one day I was like, I just want to just play some football,
and
I would just get rocked. You know what I mean? So.
But I do think that because CrossFit is – because it's also a training program, not just a sport, it's something that athletes can get into to stay competitive and stay healthy for a long time. You see a lot of professional athletes, especially in basketball, because those guys really don't train the same way football players do. They never get into that habit of exercising as much, right? It's separate. It's a little different.
It's a little different.
They gain a lot of weight, these guys that are done. They just, you know, they don't stay fit. But I think CrossFit is a cool way for athletes to transition into, like, regular lives, you know?
Yeah.
So if people want to, I don't know, get a hold of you and they maybe are here locally and they want to train with you, should they hit you up on social media or how do they get a hold of you in order to start training with NFL veteran Larry Grant?
Definitely. You can go online and follow me on my Twitter at LarryGrant95. You can also find me on my Instagram at TheReal.LG. Mm-hmm. And ask me any questions, man, and I would love to train any young athlete that's trying to do better for themselves as well. So you can always reach out to me on Facebook. You can find me as well, Larry Grant. And, you know, any social medias, I'm on all of them. Just look for me and I should pop right up. Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Well, we appreciate your time, Larry, man. It was a great time talking with you, getting some perspective and some insight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys. Follow us, BTP Podcast. Download our episodes on iTunes and subscribe to our newsletter. And as always, we'll see you next week.